Hey, my name is Launders, and you're listening to TCR.
Hello, hello, hello. Hello, and welcome to another edition. We are back at it of the Centering TCR, for short, your favorite esports podcast. Lowercase e, uppercase s.
I hate you.
Episode 31. I told you at episode 30, I didn't know when episode 31 was going to be, and I was not lying. We took a two-week hiatus, much-needed two-week hiatus, but we are back. Episode 31 of The Center Ring, coming at you live, pre-recorded, on this lovely, humid, and disgusting May 23rd evening. The time, just a little bit past 9:15 p.m. Central Standard. I'll be one of your hosts today. My name is Tim. My co-pilot, first mate, is Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Dude, I missed the intro. Like, I know we recently changed it. Yeah, it does. It really does. I like that intro.
Good.
Missed it.
Good. That is pro letter, by the way. For anyone who likes the intro song, I think that's how you say it. Pro letter. That's the guy. So anyways, we have an awesome, awesome episode for you. Episode 31. We are always going to end the show with the micro. This micro will be a little different in the sense of we're also going to shimmy some CSGO updates in there. We don't want to do a whole segment on CSGO, mainly because we don't want to dive too far into the details because we have a lot we want to discuss on the show, but you'll get CSGO in there. We also are going to have a discussion as far as esports window, the window a game has to become an esports. What exactly is that? Is it a year? Is it 2 years? If a game has an unsuccessful year, can it bounce back? I want to discuss that with Brandon. Hopefully hear from the listeners, which you can always chime in. Not live, obviously. But you can let us know your opinion on Twitter at The Center Ring. That's the show. We will also talk a little bit about WESA, whatever that is. Brandon has to update me on this because I've been out of the loop for really like 2 weeks, and I'll get into that here in just a second. But he's going to lay down what it is for me, and I'm going to give my opinion on it. To start the show, though, we'll explain a little bit what we've been doing the last 2 weeks, and we also want to touch on DreamHack Austin. I know that was 2 weeks ago now, right?
That was, we recorded an episode right before we left for DreamHack Austin. Okay. So I think it was three. I think it was three weeks.
I don't know.
A freaking lifetime in esports.
So this is what the deal was. So I had a friend come in town, or I guess we both had a friend come in town for DreamHack Austin. So he was in town. We couldn't do a show then because I'm not going to like have him fly down from Jersey and be like, so you just hang out at the house. I'll be back. So we're not going to do that to him. And then the day after he left, my mom and sister came in town because I had to move out of the apartment. Me and the fiance moved into my future in-law's place. We're going to stay there for like, you know, however long we can handle it. It's all good. All good. But all in the meantime, so here's my, so I, and this happened at MLG a little bit, not to this severity, but Brandon can attest to this. For whatever reason, and they it goes by many names, I call it the con fever, where every time you go to like a convention or a long event, you tend to get sick because there's just a lot of people in a small confined area, a lot of dirty people who just don't wash hands, and
it's just
you're putting
it's
on
all
the same virtual reality, like, especially there because everybody's touching the same mouse and keyboard. And that's partially why I didn't play any demos, because it's like, I'm good.
I don't remember seeing, I think I saw like two hand sanitizer stations the entire time we were there too.
It's a dirty place, dirty place.
Anyways,
it's happened to me at PAX South. It's happened at MLG Columbus. I come back and I'm always sick. Never fails. And this actually started the Sunday of DreamHack, where I started kind of getting a cough and I wasn't really feeling well. So on Thursday, was it? After DreamHack, a couple days after, I was coughing a lot. I was packing lots of box lifting, lots of moving, something that requires a lot of airflow, and I was coughing nonstop. And next thing I know, I am on the ground. Like, something knocked the wind out of me, could not breathe, coughing up blood. It was not pretty. So I go to the ER and go figure I have, like, bronchitis, which normally doesn't knock you out, but when you don't pay attention to it and you decide to move, I guess
it is no big deal. Yeah, this is no big deal.
I guess whatever. So that's basically what it was. I got bronchitis. It was bad for like a week. And, you know, if you hear me coughing in the background, don't be alarmed. It's just me dying. So that's essentially it.
So outside of contracting or developing bronchitis.
You develop. It is not contagious.
Let's kind of dive into DreamHack, kind of give our opinions on it. Because, I mean, at this point, everybody knows who won, who lost.
Yeah, we don't have to go into details there. Luminosity won. Big one.
Cloud9 choked.
So, wasn't a bad convention. I had a lot of fun.
Austin was awesome.
We met a lot of cool people. A listener of the show. So, you know.
Shout out to Troy Gillis.
Progress. You got a listener. It's fun. So here's my theory, though, and I actually was talking to people about this. I'm only 25 years old, but I feel like I am too old to go that hard for 3 days.
Yeah.
Like, so we, full disclosure, we did not make it to the grand finals. Now, we live about 3.5 hours out. We live in Dallas, so it's about a 3-hour, 4-hour drive, depending on traffic. The original plan was stick out till 6, which is when the doors closed, or I guess grand finals whenever they ended, and then we would drive home, get home around 9 or 10 o'clock at night. Well, we all, with the group of 6 of us that were there, I think 2 o'clock rolled around, we reconvened in our meeting location out in the lobby, kind of looked at each other.
Like,
I was upstairs watching Street Fighter and Super Smash Brothers. You had a few people downstairs watching Counter-Strike, and just... words did not have to be spoken to see the look on all of our faces and be like, we're done.
The worst part is you go to these things and you're sitting there watching a game, like a Counter-Strike match ends, you literally have like 45 minutes to kill between the next match. It's there's no engagement during the downtime, and it makes for the days to go by really slowly. Like, it's a really long days.
But on the plus side with DreamHack, though, is you can literally walk to the other side of the stage and you had Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah, something else going on.
So you had a lot going on. Here's my one beef, though, with DreamHack. I have a lot of beefs. Like, the chairs were unsittable. They were extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
They were the cheapest.
Well, we got very spoiled at MLG Columbus, the major, because, man, those arena seats were...
Yeah, but
they were heaven compared to these.
These were, like, below plastic.
Yeah.
That's just me, a 1%er, complaining about uncomfortable chairs that, you know, were completely free, if you want to look at it that way. But apart from that, you have all these, like, games going on. I mean, you had Heroes of the Storm, StarCraft, Hearthstone, Smash... you know, Pokken, all these games going on. There was not a single place anywhere that showed a schedule.
Yeah.
So you had no idea, like, unless you had your phone, but the internet connection was pretty shoddy in the convention center itself. You had no idea when things were going on. And, like, there were plenty of, like, screens there that were being used to advertise, right? But I think what would be really cool that... so you had the main stage for Counter-Strike where it was the big screen, and then you had those two screens on the left and right for to say, like, Monster Energy Drink. Well, wouldn't it be really cool to put, like, the Super Smash Brothers stream on one of those screens?
Yeah, and different games. That way your downtime is...
so you literally, in your downtime or even during a Counter-Strike match, you can see everything that's going on and know exactly where you want to be. Because let's face it, if you buy a DreamHack ticket... for the sole purpose of sitting there for 3 days straight to watch Counter-Strike, you're doing it wrong. Like, it's not that exciting to go and just watch Counter-Strike for three straight days when you have all these other games going on in the expo itself. Like, if all you're doing is going to a DreamHack event or any of these multi-game events just to watch one game, my advice is just to stay home.
Watch it on Twitch.
Watch it on Twitch, where you don't have to deal with the thunderclap giveaways and uncomfortable seats and long-ass wait times. You can do things at home.
I probably wouldn't have even made it to 2 o'clock on Sunday if they'd given those thunderclap things out prior to Sunday. If they'd given them out on, like, Friday, I don't think I would have made it.
They're rough. They're rough. The one thing that gives me comfort, though, is because I thought maybe Americans are the most annoying esports fans out there. But then, like, you watch things like the Star Ladder and stuff. I'm like, oh, they're just as stupid with their dabs and vape niche as we are. So it was comforting knowing that.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought DreamHack was a lot of fun. We need to pace ourselves better. Like, maybe for the first, like, so I've learned, because you're so hyped to get there and watch the competition. But all in all, like,
we probably shouldn't have left at 8:30 in the morning to get there.
No, no.
Before the doors open.
No, that I like, because we got to walk around Austin, and that's, I'm fine with that. But maybe not spend the first 4 hours watching the quarterfinals.
Right.
Now, the issue is if you don't watch the quarterfinals, I would never get to see Cloud9 live. So
what?
Because, you know, they're not making it out of.
What?
They barely make. I don't even think they made it to. I forget how the brackets worked. But they didn't make it very far. Or I guess group.
They made it out of, they made it out of group. They made it past CLG and then lost.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Either way, my joke is Cloud9 sucks. And I don't get to see them very often. But that's it. I think we just have to, you have to pace yourself. Because all in all, seeing those early games of like Selfless and everything is not as important. Well, that's when you need to hit the expo. And then that way for Day three, you can go see all the grand finals.
So one of the hot topics was security, because some kid during Launders and I can't remember the other guy's name, during their cast, some kid got back behind them while they were analyzing a game right after they just finished casting it. So there was this huge blow up on Twitter about DreamHack insecurity, and as somebody that was there, I actually think it was a little underemphasized. There was no security anywhere in DreamHack.
No, you could have walked in.
The caster's green room, as they call it, was literally, you go to the back of the stage and there were four curtains set up against a wall.
But nobody there.
Nobody was hanging out there.
No red tape.
Nothing.
Nothing even saying, hey, do not stand in this.
You walked right by it to go from Counter-Strike to the Heroes of the Storm stage to BYOC.
That's how I got Machine to blow me a kiss, though.
Yeah.
So there's that. You could walk in. Well, that's what I say. If someone was really just having a bad day, they could easily walk into like the backstage production area and just
screw. I mean, just even the
ruin somebody's day.
The casters, I mean, there's not even people there like operating the cameras. The cameras are stationary. They have somebody switching back and forth. But I mean, it's just them. And then there's a rope in front of them that's like asking for somebody to just like push cameras over, or yeah, it's just bad. There just wasn't security at all. I'm surprised they've gotten away with it as long as they have. I mean, obviously people are complaining about it, but I'm surprised there's as little as there is already.
At the same time, you're right. There's no security there, but just the way it's set up, it's also weird because they do have to walk. Same thing at MLG though. I mean, after Anders and Simler is done with casting, I mean, they have to walk through the fans and the crowd to get to where they need to, like, to get to their dressing room.
And for that, it was almost kind of marketed as part of, like, the VIP experience that you would be down there with the players.
Right, and I understand, like, they have no problem sitting there for hours signing autographs. But at the same time, like, if they have to go.
Yeah.
Like, they should not be the ones to be the jerks and be like, guys, sorry, I have to go. That's what an usher
You saw Summit at MLG Columbus had some guy there that was like, we're stopping the line right here, telling people, don't even worry about getting in line. This is it. That's it.
But when you're after the game, there is nobody. They are literally just sitting there until it goes away, and it never seemed like it ever did.
No.
Overall, though, it was great. We met Launders, hence the liner at the start. So, background story.
That poor guy.
Launders is an amazing sport. I've earned new respect for Launders because
There's criticisms of his casting style because he is very kind of dry.
So he's good, but he's just also, it's very obvious. I thought Luminosity does really well, and I mean, they go up B and You know, they won the tournament.
That's not to say he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's just there's a yeah, it's a very knows, dry
he
cadence.
He
just
knows
very,
what he's talking about. He's
it's no almost emotion. Comical because everybody else is so like over the top, overblown about everything. He's just even keel all the way across.
And then there's Fallen with an ace. That was a pretty good headshot there by Fallen. But that's just Launders, right? That's his. I don't know if he does it on purpose or if he's just so whatever. But that's
he's a marketing genius.
That is his style of play. So we stayed at the same hotel again as all the talent and everything, almost like for the talent. So we have a friend. His name is Anuj, and if you assumed he's Indian, you're racist. But correct. He is Indian. So we had the joke that every time that he saw Launders in the hotel, no matter how the distance was, no matter where he saw Launders in the city of Austin, he was just going to yell his name and then just do a simple, "What's up, bro?" Just a simple Indian fist bump in the air and then move on. And towards the end there, I think Launders was really like starting to understand the bit because it was just a little smile and a little nod like, okay.
Yeah, you. He's probably like, this guy again.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. Yep, thank you. And then finally at the end, we were coming back from 6th Street after a night of fun. And Anuj was like, all right, this was at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
1 or close to 2. And Anuj was like, all right, if we see Launders, we're going back to the hotel room and we're all taking shots. So lo and behold, we open up the hotel door and who is sitting in the lobby?
Launders is just hanging out, Launders, waiting for us.
Just by himself, chilling in the hotel lobby. Like he almost knew we were out, just wondering, hey man, where's my buddies at? And so Anuj finally got his selfie. We got our liner and a friendship. I want to say for life. Was
probably
was
for
made.
Life. Yeah, if I had to guess, I'd say it's for life.
I mean,
there was a real connection.
I really feel like at the next tournament, he's gonna remember us. Don't you worry, he will remember us. But apart from that, DreamHack was awesome. I really had fun. It is exhausting, and I got sick from it. But I will definitely do it again next year. Hopefully they. I don't think they're gonna keep doing it in Austin. I feel like the United States are too big for them to keep doing it in the same city.
Yeah, they're probably going to move it around.
That city and that convention center is made for things like that because it's literally all, like, we did not touch our car since we parked.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
Friday
parked it in the hotel.
Noon.
And never touched it again.
And we never touched it till we left. So that was primo. Primo. You could walk everywhere. But moving on, because believe it or not, being sick in bed and while moving and having to entertain family and friends, I didn't have a whole lot of time just to keep up with the drama of esports because it is never ending high paced action drama. And WESA, the World Esports Association, broke prematurely. Maybe I guess the world will never know. It
definitely was prematurely because I mean, the printer, you saw the tweet about the printer,
yeah,
right?
The gentleman who prints the banners for them basically tweeted out, or I'm sorry, he put on Reddit saying, look what I did today. And it was basically like a banner with all the teams. And then in between the teams, it had this logo for WESA. And everyone was like, what's this WESA? My God, it has to mean that they're doing their own league or own...
Everyone assumed league, exclusivity league.
Yes, that was the rumor, and I mean...
Because this isn't the first time ESL's tried it.
Shit hit the fan. Like, everybody was sounding the alarms, including, like, Thorn. And Thorn even tweeted out saying, like, if this is what I think it is, then all these teams should basically be ashamed of themselves for making the dumbest decision of their career. And all of a sudden, everybody gets behind Thorin saying, yeah, this is retarded. This is stupid. I don't agree. Where literally nothing but this picture was posted for like a day or two. And then ESL came out and said, like, we're going to shed some light.
It was about about 2 or 3 days between the tweet and then their actual press release.
And then apart from like Reddit headlines, that's all I know.
All right. Well, unfortunately, I think Reddit is a little biased on the subject. You're probably already, but I think you already are going the other way.
You know me. I don't falter from headlines.
So the WESA is an association that includes the founding teams are Fnatic, Na'Vi, Envious, Virtus Pro, G2, FaZe, Mouse Sports, and Ninjas in Pajamas.
Okay.
So there's eight teams.
Okay.
The structure of WESA is two tournament organizers, two representatives of the teams, and then what they called a commissioner. They screwed up when they called it a commissioner because commissioners commission over leagues. WESA has tried their hardest to distance themselves from the idea of being a league, and they're not. They're not a league.
So if they're not a league, what are they? Just a body?
They are, and then they drew the, I just got to say, like, the entire release process of this, they had it planned. They had a press release. They had an interview with Richard Lewis released, and then they had a Reddit Q&A that they were going to be doing all on the same day.
Okay.
They should have done great. Every single one of these things said something different, and it caused all kinds of alarms to go off for people. They compared themselves to FIFA at one point. They've compared themselves to NFL or NHL at one point. They say they are not a league, but what their main goal is to, right out of the press release, WESA will offer a chance to bring all esports stakeholders, players, teams, organizers, and broadcasters to the discussion table in order to bring much-needed structure, predictable schedules, and a transparency to the scene.
So, this is where I'm confused. So, is WESA, are they planning on getting with all these guys, like MLG and...
No.
So...
No, so...
So, how are they going to have a structured schedule if... So all these other organizations aren't
so on the same WESA page. Is going to sanction tournaments. They will sanction a tournament if that tournament meets whatever standards WESA sets. And that standards that it's going to be set by are supposed to be a group decision by those two board members from that are employed by ESL. Two of the board members are employed by ESL, the two team representatives, and the commissioner.
But in no way are they going to, and I guess that's where the teams come into play. That's where where WESA gets their weight from.
Yes, because if the teams say we will only play in WESA tournaments.
To be fair, MLG doesn't give a rip on what WESA says. If anything, MLG is probably like, why the hell are you guys telling us how to sanction our tournament?
Right. So, but if the team owners say my team's not going to play in your tournament because you're not WESA certified, which later on it came out, somebody told Scoots. Scoots actually broke two big pieces of information about this. Somebody told Scoots that after 2 years in WESA, like under contract, that the teams become WESA exclusive teams. So they will only play in sanctioned tournaments.
So it basically gives 2 years for other tournament organizers to get their things in order.
Or by WESA standards. Now, like I said, I keep emphasizing this, ESL has two of those board member slots, and ESL are the people that appointed the interim commissioner, Pietro... Figluini, who is a Polish lawyer who cut his teeth in marketing law and working for the UEFA, which is the football association.
UEFA. We won't judge. I don't work
on the kick around.
No, you're right. You're not a producer of a soccer show. It's okay.
No.
We'll let it slide.
So you've got, and then the players are supposed to also have a players council who elects, I think, two members to discuss player issues, which are like contracts, transfer windows for players, you know, what they want to see at tournaments, and they can help advise, but they don't technically have a seat at the board to make decisions. It's the team owners and the other board members.
So tell me this then. What is the general thought now? Because I know when this first broke and everything, I know there was a lot of branches on what people were understanding and what was true and what was false and everything there. Are people still really against this idea?
Yes, because of the stuff Scoots broke. So not only did these teams...
But they're not exclusive to...
Not yet.
To ESL. They're just exclusive in the sense of but they have a standard and they want to play with that standard.
Right, but if you go along with this, you're basically saying WESA now controls what teams play in, or what teams or what tournaments teams play in. And as of right now, right this second, the only tournament that's WESA sanctioned is the ESL Pro League. Granted, it's only been a week and a half or whatever since it's been announced.
Are there any ideas on what type of things need to be sanctioned? Like
they haven't released any kind of
like I assume
demands. I guess demands is a terrible word to use,
but I mean that's what it is.
Yeah,
that's I mean however you want to paint the wall.
Yeah, they haven't listed any goals.
So
the team, I mean, in each team that joined, the first eight teams were paid $150,000 each for each team to join. So they were paid to join.
Well, and you know, we always said, how are we going to get a governing body and how are we going to get it to our teams? And this is how. You pay them a lot of money and you slowly have, you know, everybody else conform to the way you do. Now, so this is me. I don't necessarily have an issue with it because I've always said on this, I wish there was somebody to take charge in the sense of getting teams together. And this is how this is one step closer to a player union in the sense of when you have this, right? This is kind of like a player union in the sense of
this is not a player's union at all,
but in the sense of they have a voice and how they want to be structured. Like what if they're sanctioned is look,
well, the player,
you need to at least tell these players a month ahead of time when your tournament is and everything.
But the players don't have a say in the sanctioning. The only thing players have a say in is how the players are treated by the teams and like player contracts and transfer windows. Not necessarily like tournament scheduling. They don't have a say in that. They don't have a say in how many tournaments they play a year. They don't have a say in how often they have to travel. Like they only have a say in the structured part of like what they do, like their contracts. And it's to set standards so that you don't have players getting screwed over by smaller teams. It also sets a bit of a barrier of entry for new teams. Because if you have, you know, players are required to be paid X amount of percentage for this and X amount of percentage for that, and new teams can't meet that, obviously no players are going to play for a new team. The thing that bothers everybody about this is that ESL controls so much portion of it. Now, they don't necessarily control the other tournaments, and other tournaments can be WESA certified, which, by the way, they have to pay WESA a fee to be sanctioned.
See, and that's what I think is ridiculous in the sense of...
That's how they're like, going to operate.
Like, this is what I don't get in that point of view. Is like, what is WESA? Like, why do I... like?
Well, and that's another thing that bothered everybody is that it was registered not as a nonprofit, but registered as a for-profit business by Turtle Entertainment, the people that own ESL. So everybody looks at it and they're like, no, you're not trying to make esports better. You're trying to like extort money out of everybody else.
That's essentially what it is. It's almost like if me and you decided to create some standard for podcasting and thought, you cannot call yourself a podcast until you meet these standards. If you want us to review your podcast, that's fine. We'll do that for you for a fee, and then we'll give you the stamp of approval. But really, we have no weight in any of this unless, you know, we...
Yeah.
That's the only way ESL, is it proper to say the only way ESL can do this?
Yeah, ESL's doing it, yeah.
So the only way ESL can do this is because they have the money to throw at these teams, which all in all, $150,000 isn't that much in the control that they're getting back.
Yeah, and well, they're supposed to be getting portions like that of that revenue enough as well that WSA gets from the sanctioning. Like the teams are supposed to receive some of it. So they're getting like kickbacks from ESL for allowing ESL to use their clout to get money from other tournament organizers. I mean, you have to think it's pretty genius. Everybody's like, well, Valve needs to step in. Valve needs to step in.
100% genius.
ESL is not putting on these tournaments. ESL is not telling anybody they can't put on tournaments. I mean, ECS, E-League, they're all still more than welcome to put on a tournament. You won't have any of the top teams, but you're more than welcome to do a Counter-Strike tournament. I was like, the only possible way for Valve to shut this down at this point is to tell ESL they're not allowed to use their game anymore.
Right, because essentially ESL
if you crush ESL, you crush WESA.
And essentially ESL is making money through Counter-Strike, which is Valve, and Valve might not like the sense of like,
well,
no,
Gabe, there was quotes of Gabe's, there was Gabe's comments back the first time ESL tried to do exclusivity with the teams, and basically said, he said exclusivity is terrible for the game, it'll ruin the game, and we're not letting it happen. Obviously, they haven't done anything yet. The only ridiculous report came from IGN's Kevin Nock, or the esports radio guy. He has his own radio show on Sirius. posted.
This is the only other thing other than this is one of those Reddit headlines that I saw that I followed closely because just the mess that it created.
Said the headline reads, sources FaZe Clan to leave WESA. This was after the big backlash. Sources, okay, so it just starts. Sources close to FaZe Clan tell IGN that the team will be leaving the newly formed WESA due to early demands of exclusivity by ESL. They're reported to pay as much as $50,000 in out-of-pocket penalties to leave the Federation. So if that $50,000 is accurate, even if teams leave this, leave WESA and WESA fails completely, ESL still stands to make like $450,000 off of it.
The lawyers that they had to write this up with, man.
Because they get back the $150K.
Insane.
They get back the $150K bonus for joining and then an additional $50,000 in penalties per team. That's $400K.
It's insane.
So even if they lose, they win. Right? I mean, they're not going to stop putting on big tournaments.
And that's how you make a business, ladies and gentlemen.
Later on, the IGN report said that rumored ESL was to lose major status for the Cologne CSGO major.
And that is Valve's decision-making.
That would have been Valve's decision-making, and that's like, that is the big ESL event that's so in their hometown.
Within like 2 days, because he teased it saying, hey, some big WESA news coming down the wire.
Yeah.
And then I think it was like 2 days later, he posted this story on IGN's esports section, which first off, IGN's a joke of a website to begin with, but then he did this.
I will say Richard Lewis tweeted out after he did and said, quote, it was nice to be beaten to the punch.
Right. So this
is huge. That says that everybody immediately thinks that's credibility. That is true.
Huge breaking news. And
hours later, ESL came out and said, nope, Valve confirmed that we still have major status. So
nothing has came down.
FaZe has not said anything one way or the other, as far as everybody knows. They're still members of WESA.
So all that drama that happened because of this guy's story is basically completely voided out. And now look, I understand as a reporter, you have a lot of faith in your sources. I mean, that's what they're there for. They are sources. That being said, don't you hold some type of responsibility for when you do report bad news? And this is my thing. And this happens in radio and TV all the time. I mean, ESPN does this all the time, where they'll report something, whether or not it's true. 99% of the time, it doesn't turn out to be true. But it's because they want to be that first to break the story.
Yeah, and that could have been... He did say that he heard from two separate sources independently, yeah, and get it.
And then they do the backtrack of saying, I updated this to say...
In my opinion, and I will say this, Scoots pointed out the fact that ESL was very quick to deny the fact that Valve said they were no longer going to have a major in Cologne. They have not released a statement on FaZe, so it's still technically up in the air, but the fact that FaZe hasn't confirmed it and the other part of the entire story was deemed false, it's hard to say like that's going to be true.
Right, and my one thing I love throughout all this, though, is the blind following that people have or the blind hatred that people have for like the big man. Where even now they're like, well, how can we even trust ESL on what they say about, the major. Why would you not be able to trust them? ESL hasn't lied throughout all this. You just don't like their system and what their plan is.
Yeah.
But they're not lying about anything. This guy was the one who wrote a whole story saying, yep, it's true. And then less than 24 hours later is saying, well, we're still doing some research on this. And then completely doesn't like tweet about it ever again. Like, he's just literally letting this try to go by the wayside, and everybody else is kind of forgetting about it because, you know, we had two tournaments over the weekend, so whatever. It's ridiculous. It's crazy to me that this amount of news and everything can happen, and yet we still find a way to be mad at ESL. And I understand if you don't like their point of view or what they're trying to do, but at the same time, to me, I guess I have more of an open mind in the sense of I need to just wait. I need to wait and see. I don't hate the idea of being exclusive. I don't hate the idea, you know, we all knew it was going to happen. We all knew that at one point in time, someone was going to throw their checkbook around to try and bring in these big players and have more control in the scene. We all knew it was going to happen at one point in time. And it's, you know, ESL was the first one to pull the trigger. Just like, you know, you have all these people now all of a sudden have their own league. Face It has their own league. All these people have their own leagues. ESL is now going to have their own association. You're going to get another one who it gets lesser teams involved because, like you said, the WESA is kind of structured for the bigger teams. They're not there for the little teams. So you're going to have, you know, maybe what we're seeing now is the starting of the majors and a minor league, per se, where you have this association of minor, lesser teams, and you have this organization and association of the bigger teams. Maybe this is what we're starting to see develop, and we just don't recognize it yet. But if you take a step back, it doesn't seem too crazy.
I thought Face It was going to be the one to actually take over because they were offering team stuff that no other company was offering. And that's the frustrating part, is that this joining the WESA, granted, the ECS probably started too late, now that I'm thinking about it, because apparently the talks for WESA go back like 18 months. Like, people have been, they've been having like secret closed door meetings for 18 months, which is why everybody started laughing when they were talking about transparency, because this has been anything but transparent the entire time it's been around.
People need to get over the transparency, though.
Well, I mean, like, if they really, say like, in their mission statement, they were like, we want esports to be more transparent. By the way, we've been talking about this behind everybody's back for 18 months.
But what do you want? Like, do you really want, like, every time there's a meeting for anything now, for us to be like, hey guys, we just want to let you know we met with Fnatic and we talked about this.
During one of the interviews with Richard Lewis, I think it was Lampkin, one of the seats or one of the ESL employees, basically said, like, He claimed it was so fragile that if people heard about it, they would have destroyed it before it ever had a chance of taking off. Like, if people would have destroyed it.
Well, the reaction.
I mean, the reaction was not good. The reaction would have been terrible anyway.
The reaction then would probably be the same that it is now.
Right. But I mean, if that's going to be the reaction, maybe you're not doing it right. Which is why I wished teams would have. Because this is such a short term thing for me for teams. Like, they get this huge signing bonus and they get the potential of revenue sharing later, where with ECS, they were getting equity in ECS. Like, the teams would have had partial ownership of the league.
Right. And to me, I agree with you.
Much more say in it.
That makes more sense.
If ECS became big, or if the teams committed to making ECS big, you would have gotten a bigger percentage of profits than whatever I'm sure ESL is going to kick back. I was like, I don't understand why you guys didn't go for that. Yeah.
I mean, the WESA is, like you said, like, that they could blow up in the good sense, but yet the team still have no say in the rules.
Yeah.
Like, they still control everything that has to be sanctioned. Where with the other one, with
you
Face
have part
It,
equity
you
in,
had
yeah.
some more of a say than this. I guess it's one of those things where only time will tell. Is there any type of timetable on when more information's coming out or when this is supposed to begin?
As far as WESA was concerned, they said that the teams will continue to compete in tournaments that have already been scheduled. So that means only tournaments that or were scheduled prior to this announcement. So like ECS and E-League and all that is totally okay for now. They did say, it did come out that the exclusivity contract portion of the contract with the team is supposed to start in, like I said, 2 years. So, I mean, I guess that's technically the window. No more information has come out since then. I think ESL realized how much they screwed up with this release schedule that they did and how nobody was on the same page about what they were supposed to be saying. So they have gone completely dark as far as information goes.
Probably best. I mean, when you get as much backlash as they have on that, that tends to be the strategy, right? Yeah. Just lay low, let it blow over. We'll reconvene in a couple weeks, months after the tournament season, and you know, we'll go from there. Slowly start slipping in sanctions.
Yeah.
And move on. Move on just like we're doing with the segment. We'll keep an eye on WESA just like everyone else. We'll see what is real, what is false. Are they the monsters that everyone makes them out to be? I'm still not convinced, but then again, I like to give business more leeway than others. I like to give the big money more. Mainly because they're the ones who pay me. So I, man, WESA, that's the best. You need an official podcast? I think that's the best idea ever.
And you've all heard it. The co-host is willing to sell out that easily.
Right. So, yeah. Yes, I am. So, moving on, though, I wanted to touch on this. We don't have to go too far, but in light of Overwatch coming out officially tomorrow, already out today, unless you're an idiot and didn't pre-order it.
I have a lot of stuff going on in my life.
A lot of stuff for, like, two clicks? Literally,
I mean, it's true.
Two
clicks.
But,
I mean, I lost 45 minutes of gameplay. That's it.
You lost five loot crates. We're already ahead of you. When we're 25 playing ranked, you'll...
What's freaking new?
You'll be playing with scrubs.
In the brawl.
In the brawl. So, looking here, though, I wanted to discuss this, and we kind of talked about it. I can't remember if it was out of the show or in a previous episode, about the window that new games have to be considered a successful esport. Now, I guess maybe, like I said, maybe we don't have enough time today to dive into it because we might have to talk. We'll have to define what is a successful esport, right?
Right.
Like, is Counter-Strike and League of Legends and Dota, is that the bar for a successful esport? Or is that the bar for, like, top-tier esports?
Yeah.
Is a successful esport?
I've seen a chart of tiered esports. That starts, I mean, it has like in tier one is obviously StarCraft, League of Legends, like you said, Dota 2 and Counter-Strike. And then like tier two are things like Heroes of the Storm maybe, or they may have been tier three, Rocket League, Smite.
Right. So what is the window though? Because esports, E-League starting, esports is becoming a lot more relevant really fast.
Yeah.
So, meaning the window for a lot of these lower tier games are, I feel, getting smaller.
Much
in the
smaller.
Sense of you might not make it. Like, your esports capability is going to make or break whether your game survives past year one, as far as the community goes.
It's true, yeah.
Now, that also comes into play a lot that now developers are making games solely for esports. Like, Smite was not made just to be a fun pickup game with friends.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of games now that are solely made for the competition aspect that don't have any type of single player or anything to do with it.
It's almost like esports is being used as a marketing tool for some of these games.
Oh, it absolutely is. It absolutely is.
I mean, like, what game was it?
Well, look, Vainglory. Vainglory for the tablets everything, that's only marketed as an esport.
That game I got into the beta, the Paladins game, I mean, they had a closed beta, much like Overwatch did, actually, like a closed beta Founders tournament, trying to get people to play it more competitively.
Yeah.
Because they've seen now that between like League of Legends and Dota 2, if you have a huge esports market, people will keep playing your game for years.
The issue with that though is when you're a new game coming in, you have to compete with the old games that are already there.
Yeah. The games that are already throwing millions of dollars into prize pools.
For example, look at the Overwatch subreddit and see how many people post Can't wait to completely drop League of Legends. Can't wait to switch over from Counter-Strike. They're not like, oh man, I can't wait to play Overwatch. No, they're going to drop Counter-Strike entirely to just play Overwatch. And that's the way we play games now. You don't really jump back and forth between a lot of games. You kind of have your core. Like we go from Heroes of the Storm.
We switched, though. We were playing a lot of Counter-Strike. Then we started playing a lot of Heroes of the Storm.
Well, the chair league helps. The fact that we're in a league for that. You kind of have to. Speaking of which, we have a match tomorrow. So that has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, if you can win people over to not go back to that game, that's great. But in a case like, and I think this is where we originally started with it, was Heroes of the Storm. Like, do you feel that Heroes of the Storm will ever be bigger than what it is today?
No.
It's a little over a year old. You know,
I don't think so. Heroes of the Storm, though, it's the problem with Heroes of the Storm is that the games it was competing with were two of the most, like, entrenched games, League of Legends and Dota 2. Overwatch, I feel like, has kind of got a unique, because it's a first-person class-based shooter, which TF2 was the same, but Valve never really put money behind the competitive side of TF2. Like, they didn't get a competitive mode until, like, 3 months ago, 4 months ago,
I think. Well,
that's in
beta still.
Yeah, so they never had, like, a super competitive side, whereas Blizzard is very clearly going to be throwing money behind Overwatch, trying to push it. And I feel like people still get super hyped up for the wild, kind of Wild Wild West sort of mentality. Like, I was never able to go pro in Counter-Strike, but that's because these players have been playing since 1.3. I'm going to go play Overwatch because it's a brand new game and maybe I can go pro in it.
And Overwatch also has this unique thing where you don't know if you suck. Like you can always, like, even if your team gets dominated and it's clearly you are the reason, there's no scoreboard to let people know that.
And all your stats, I mean, you do see kills and deaths, I guess, but you only see yours and you're like,
even in your warped mind, you're like, man, I did everything I could. It's, you know, my healer didn't heal me. That's why we lost. If my healer would have just healed me when we made that push. So Overwatch has that unique ability where I feel like people are going to stick with it. But nonetheless, like so Heroes of the Storm is also unique in the sense of, same with Overwatch, it's backed by Blizzard. It is backed by a company where Blizzard Activision is going to throw money at this thing to make it successful.
So I feel like,
even if it's not successful, they're going to make it look successful.
I think the only reason Heroes of the Storm has stayed relevant as far as competitive tournaments go is Heroes of the Dorm, which is kind of, once again, a unique approach to the whole tournament thing. They kind of do the March Madness sort of thing where they have the schools competing, which is awesome. I mean, when they did Heroes of the Dorm, I actually filled out a full bracket. I was rooting for my local teams.
Body involved.
And they play for scholarships, which I think is great. That's awesome. I don't think at all the Heroes of the Storms would be relevant if it wasn't for that particular Blizzard tournament.
But even then, it wouldn't be at all relevant if it wasn't Blizzard keeping it up.
Yeah, like, Blizzard is putting that on.
So, like, look at StarCraft II. Albeit, it's popular. But it's been on the decline now for years.
Yeah, it's actually hitting a real low spot right now.
Right, like a lot of people are saying, when are they just going to pull the plug on it? But then you go to, like, watch, like, the BlizzCon tournaments, and Blizzard has that thing hyped to unreal amounts.
Yeah.
Like, the stage is insane, and I mean, it is, you
they
would think
put
StarCraft
on a
2 is the biggest thing out there. So definitely the developer has something to do with the lifespan or the window that it can become, or I guess the window that it can last. Like, that's completely different from what I really want to see, is where when do we pull the plug on this probably isn't going to be as big of an esport as we thought it was going to be. Like, I think after
it's so hard to put a timeline on that, because I mean, I guess when you stop updating a game, but I feel like it would already be dead if you stop updating it.
Right. Oh, yeah. Like, that's way
beyond the point of no return.
Because you have, like, League of Legends, which I know some people are like, oh, do you see the numbers? They're dropping. Do you really think League of Legends is just going to disappear? Like, where are those kids who play League of Legends going to go?
Yeah.
They're not going to pick up Dota because I feel like they almost don't like Dota because it's Dota. Like, it's almost like a Boston-New York rivalry.
Yeah,
in the sense
you play your game and you don't want anything to do with those other guys.
Right. Yeah, I know they're basically the same thing, but yours sucks. And same thing with Heroes of the Storm. I think that's where the only thing Heroes of the Storm has it going for is where you kind of get that middle ground of people who can't play either, like us, play Heroes of the Storm. And Overwatch kind of has that same ability where, I mean, even look at that, like the Heroes of the Storm, they had their player drop, and now he said he's going to focus on Overwatch. Like, Overwatch has that unique thing where you don't really have to be a skillful shooter. You just have to have the right mind.
It helps, but it's much more team-based.
But team-based and just knowing map awareness and strategy and being aware of what you're doing can help in Overwatch. But nonetheless, like, what if Overwatch just busts because their spectating sucks, which it does? Like, go YouTube professional Overwatch tournaments, and it's impossible to watch. Like, even for someone who played in beta, it is impossible to watch. The colors are backwards for whatever reason. That makes no sense.
You've been on a campaign about that for a while.
And no one seems to care.
Tim's like, do you guys not see what I'm looking at right now?
Literally.
I was like, the offense, red team, their objective is blue, and the blue team's is red.
Like, how that got through anyone, I don't know. And no one seems to hear me. It's mind-numbing, but it will get changed. It will get changed eventually. I promise you, it will.
I don't know. Between the graphics set and like all of the crazy colors and bullet tracers and different types of projectiles, that game's hectic to play. But at least when you're playing, you're like in it and you can kind of get a feel of what's going on.
Okay, but in your argument for that, look at games like Dota or Heroes of the Storm when everyone drops their ultimate. Like, do you have any idea what's going on in a team fight watching it?
But the difference between that and Overwatch is from the first person perspective, you don't get to see the overview like where other players are going or what they're doing.
No, like I said, and Blizzard is going to have to overhaul the spectating aspect in that game.
Well, and I worry that if you do that, like if you pull out to third person and you're trying to watch like a giant team fight on one of the cap points before the payload comes out, that once you do that, you can see what's going on, but you lose watching the skill aspect of it because you're not watching the people aim anymore. You're just watching bullet tracers go back and forth.
That's completely fair. Because, I mean, it's the same thing in Counter-Strike. If you zoom to third person, somebody's quick scope is not going to be nearly as impressive.
Yeah, you're just going to see a shot and the guy died, and you're like, all right, whatever.
That's just going to have to be something that happens in time.
Yeah, they're going to have to need some like super skillful camera people that can switch between first and third.
And that's another thing. I'm pumping the brakes on completely abandoning it from a spectating sport because it's a new game.
Yeah.
Producers aren't used to knowing where to be and when or who to follow for that matter.
Oh, and the maps, the way the maps are stacked in so many different levels to like be able to pay attention that there's going to be like a Widowmaker at the very top level shooting down.
Right.
Winston flying through the air.
You're going to have a lot of eyeballs on the screens to know when to flip over. So we'll pump the brakes on that. Okay. I guess my real question or my real conversation is, what's the window on what you feel is a realistic thing to pull the plug on what's going to be considered a success?
If I actually put a limit on it, I would say Heroes of the Storm doesn't even reach it. I would put something like, I guess they do when they have the big tournaments. I was thinking top five on Twitch.
Like, I think of games like...
Well, I think of viewership
Twitch
numbers.
Twitch does play a huge part in what's going to be considered a success, because if you see it in the top 10, you're obviously going to get more people clicking on it just because it's there. Now, like games, like I think of games like Heroes of the Storm or Smite even Call of Duty
Do you consider the cutoff only when a big tournament is going on, or like, because Heroes of the Storm is like bottom, like top 20, I think, maybe on Twitch? When there's no tournaments going on, like just normal streamers streaming it. But whenever there's a big tournament,
I consider
it's
only
skyrocks.
When tournaments.
Yeah, it goes back up to the top.
That's a game popularity thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot, like, for instance, Dota, I do not watch Dota streamers. I will watch Dota tournaments, though.
Right.
Like, I only have an interest in the professional Dota scene. I don't give a rip on some Joe Schmo streaming Dota.
So I would say if you drop out of the top five on Twitch while you're streaming one of your big tournaments, like I'm talking like 100K tournaments, 250K tournaments, if you drop out of the top five on Twitch when you're trying to do stuff like that, it's done. Like, just pull the plug, call it a day.
And I think another issue with that also is the amount of tournaments. Like, if Heroes of the Storm, they don't have nearly as many tournaments as
right.
other leagues do. Now, Blizzard's whole season tournaments is helping. They're at the worst times, though.
Yeah, they're like, always like right in the middle of the day.
Middle of the day or middle of the night. They're terrible timing. But tournaments help because that's when you get to see the pro teams. And, you know, if you're a fan of Cloud9, you might watch a Cloud9 match and Heroes of the Storm just because. So tournaments help. But I agree where I give it, after 2 years, if you are still not getting consistent, I would say 80,000 plus viewers, you probably should just pull the plug.
Pack it in.
Just pack it in. I don't know, because eventually some of these have to make way for the bigger boys. But I don't know. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe I'm too harsh on what I consider a successful esport is and what I should care about. Maybe there are a lot of Smite players out there listening that are... Now, you're shaking your head no. Is that there's not a lot of Smite players listening, or there's just not a lot of people listening?
I was going to go with Smite players.
Probably a mixture
like,
of both.
It's like there's not a lot of Smite players or players listening.
A mixture of both. So, I don't know. Let us know at the Center Ring or on our website, tcr.gg. Either one, you can let us know what you think. Is the cutoff date or what you feel is a successful esport? Because I guess that's the big question that you have to tackle before you can have this conversation, is what's considered a successful esport? An esport that is successful enough to continue on. Because look at, for example, and then we'll move on to the micro, but like Super Smash Brothers has zero viewership on Twitch until there's a big tournament.
That's true.
And even then, it's really only up until like after group play and you hit the quarterfinals.
Or it's like that, the big house, like, yeah, event, like the big, big event.
Right. Yeah. When you start seeing the big tournaments, that's the only time you'll get big viewership. But that's a successful esport.
I feel like fighting games are their own deal. Like, you can't lump fighting esports into any other conversation with esports.
No, I mean, you're very right, because all of them, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter V, have zero viewership.
The people that play those games played it for the love of the game. Like, nobody's like, I'm quitting my esport to try and become pro in another one. No, they're like, I just really like playing Street Fighter, or I just really like playing Smash.
Probably helps because it's just you.
Yeah.
Like, if you suck, you're like, all right, I know what I have to do.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about a teammate. But let us know, seriously, at the Center Ring on what you feel is a successful esport, and then what would be the window for that to be an esport in longevity in the future. Moving on to the micro, though, we actually have a handful of things that we want to talk about. Quick CSGO recap, because a lot of tournaments have happened in the couple weeks that we've been off. You had the ESL Pro League, where Luminosity overtook G2 in a best of five. They took it to the fifth map in OT. This is where, though, I have an issue calling Luminosity number one. I think, so hear me out, because what I'm about to say is going to make zero sense, and I'm aware of that. Is Luminosity the best team currently? Yes. Are they a number one team? No. Like, the only reason they're number one is because someone has to be number one. But to me, they still don't play like a number one team, I feel, should play. Like, a number one team does not get taken to the fifth map in OT against G2.
I think the problem...
Which has been playing well. G2
I think the problem well. Is Fnatic's run at the beginning of this year and the end of last year, that's a number one team, like, where they just made people look stupid for like 5-6 months straight. Luminosity's going to overtime. They're being taken to overtime right. rounds
they're,
in the fifth
they're winning.
Maps. Yeah.
They're winning, just not in number one seed fashion.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So yeah, they're number one right now, sure. But they...
That's disrespectful.
They're not convincing.
Hey, what do they have to do? They what do they have to do to get you respect?
They have to not go to the fifth map in OT against G2. That's what they have to not do. You had the Star Ladder Invitational. Speaking of crazies, VP beat Na'Vi.
Say what?
So all of a sudden...
VP showed up?
VP decided to show up in 2016. It took them 5 months to get there, but they're back. They're back, boys. The other note for this tournament, they had the team worst players were there. That's Simple's new team.
Okay. Which, I was like, okay.
Which is basically a ragtag bunch of Simple and I think some friends.
Yeah.
Now, the only reason they were there is because Tyloo had visa issues. And then Born of Fire, the team replacing Tyloo, also had visa issues.
So they won by default.
Guess who gets invited? They didn't play terrible. I feel like Simple definitely carried them, but they didn't play terrible.
Yeah.
And I know people are giving a lot of grief to Simple saying, so you left Liquid for this, huh? You could have, you know, you and Liquid could have been something, but you left for this? I think people are missing the point on why he left.
Yeah, it wasn't.
He didn't
mentally
leave.
Mentally, it
right.
wasn't going to work out.
Right. Yeah, it was not a, you know, and I know some people are even saying, well, that's the issue with these younger players is that they just don't want to tough it out. But I feel like in his case, it's like, man, that was an 18-year-old kid a long way from home. And he probably just didn't want to deal with it. And then you also, small tournament, but the MLG Americas Minor happened where Optic Gaming defeated Tempo Storm in a 2-1. Optic Gaming, coincidentally the same weekend where they did not respond to my email requesting for an interview. I don't know if there's any connection there, but it's the second time. It's the second time Optic Gaming has done that to me.
At least you got through the first email.
It's a quick shot down to earth when you email someone for an interview request about their new book, and then they ask for your listening numbers. You're like, you don't worry about my listening numbers, bro.
You remember that? You remember like chapter 2 in your book when you were talking about how the struggles
starting? Nothing. Yeah, don't you worry about my listening numbers. All right, how's your listening numbers? So nonetheless, I digress. It's fine though because I actually have not finished that book. It's a good book. Optic Gaming's new book. It's
did
good.
You, be honest. I be honest. Did you did you lose motivation after they didn't respond? Like the second day they didn't respond, you're like,
yeah.
Do I even want to finish this?
That's what happened. I mean, really, it does kind of sting when you're like, I don't want to read your story. You respond to my email. if they were like, yeah, we'll do it in an hour. Oh my god, I would.
You would have been
get me to Spark Notes. Power read, I need to power read through this. What else do you have for the micro?
To kind of harken back to our second topic, talking about journalistic integrity. The website PvP Live, most notably known now for completely ripping off ESPN's website
and
design.
Not even hiding it.
Not even hiding it. PvP Live released a news story today saying that ESPN and Riot Games were in talks to secure broadcasting rights for League of Legends on ESPN to the tune of $500 million. It took about 45 minutes for both ESPN and Riot Games to say, yeah, that's not happening.
Again, comes back to my point where people are more concerned with just breaking the story and getting it out there, and then they'll deal with the consequences and picking up the pieces later on. But now, PvP Live got the mouse clicks, they got the viewerships that they wanted, people know their name now. And if this ever does become a true story, it's going to be as originally reported on PvP Live. So it's an issue. But, hey, congratulations. What else here? Oh, well, again, we've kind of talked about it before, but E-League, that does start tomorrow online and then, well, on streaming. It's all in person in Atlanta. And then the actual TV, though, happens Friday at 7, I believe. I believe it's 7 Eastern. So that's primetime television on a Friday. So that find that on TBS. Also, you have Mewtwo King signs with Echo Fox. So,
and another signing. That's huge for Mewtwo King.
That's huge for Mewtwo King. I know a lot of people were saying it's good to see Mewtwo King finally get a signing with a big organization. think it's an organization signing a big player, if you ask me.
I agree.
Like, that's a bigger signing for Echo Fox than Mewtwo King.
Yeah.
M2K, realistically, I'm surprised it took him this long to sign with someone big. He was with Cognitive Gaming for a while. But, I mean, Echo Fox, the only reason they're big is because of their name or anything like that. It's not, they're not, like, big in success-wise. They just have good backing on it. So that's, I feel like that's a bigger signing for Echo Fox than Mewtwo King, personally.
In a story that's the other way around, I know I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly, SC Schlock 04 Football Club. You know how to pronounce it, Mr.
Just move on.
Anyway, they signed a League of Legends team, Elements, who was forced to sell their team because of Riot ruling that there was some kind of, I think they were...
What else is new?
I think they were, I don't remember. Renegades was one of them that was told that they couldn't play anymore, and then I believe Elements was the other one, so...
Well, good.
But an actual football club, a big football club, signed a League of Legends team.
Well, good. We'll see what happens there. And then again, deja vu all over again. Capcom bans, essentially reconfirms that no, Team YP is not allowed at their events. They did say that they're going to review their sponsorship rules.
The players are allowed.
The players are allowed.
But they cannot have any reference to Team YP, who paid for them to be there.
Sucks for Team YP. But I guess that's the risk you take when you're a porno site.
But I feel like people are going to know, regardless of whether or not he has Team YP in his name when he's competing. I'm talking about Valmaster, who competes in Street Fighter.
That's probably why they don't make as big of a deal, because this is probably more publicity than... Like, let's face it. Team YP would not be having this type of publicity.
They've had two huge headlines in the last 2 months, like, because people are like, you can't have that sponsor.
They definitely wouldn't be in the news as much if they weren't Team YP. So I guess it's any publicity is good publicity for them in this case. It sucks, but the rules are the rules, and you got to follow them. Don't be a porno site.
Try harder.
I don't know. Make better decisions in life. I don't know. I don't have an issue with it, but that's, not a tournament organizer. I'm not an organizer trying to sell for sponsorship.
True story.
That's what it comes down to. It's, look, Team YP, it's not what Capcom feels. It's what the people paying Capcom feels. And that's where you find yourself in an uphill battle. Anywho, that's going to about do it for episode 31 of The Center Ring. I hope you enjoyed the show. I know I enjoyed being back. Brandon, did you enjoy being back?
It was good being back in the studio.
I felt like my cough died down. I was like dying in the pre-show meeting. And
yeah, you were. You almost fell over
if
again.
If I just keep talking, I feel like it's okay. We'll be back next week. We're back on regular schedule. Monday's recording, Tuesday's audio out, and the video is whenever the hell we feel like it. Actually, we are working on a recording studio at Brandon's place, to where we have more of a permanent location as far as video recording goes. So hopefully we'll start streaming here soon, and we can just throw those up on YouTube and be a lot less work than what we do now. But that's all, in the future. Future plans. Anyways, episode 31 of The Center Ring is done. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on Twitter. The show is at The Center Ring. I am at Pirate Mushroom. Brandon is at
Brand Any New.
Be sure to follow all of us. Get all the latest news on the show. You can check out the website, tcr.gg. And am I missing anything else? We'll be back next week. We'll talk E-League. We're going to watch that, see how that production goes. See if Alchemist screws up. We'll definitely call him out on it.
We're watching.
Friend of the show, producer of E-League. Congratulations. That's it. That's all I got for you. Episode 31 is done. We'll be back next week for episode 32 on time. Until then, take it easy.